Sports Day for Kia. The super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. And Lumo SA. Aussie owned, made for South Australia.
Yeah, good evening and welcome to Sports Day. Good to have your company on this Monday after what's been a fine weekend for Adelaide sports teams. The Adelaide Lightning belted the Sydney Flames, I think it was Thursday last week. Strikers won on Friday night and again last night. Now they're in the final three. That is a remarkable story. Travis Head from the Adelaide Strikers to join us a little bit later on tonight. The Reds win 3-1 away to Brisbane. They're now in fifth. The Reds women beat Melbourne 1-0. They're now in fourth. Only the 36ers had a bit of a wobble against Melbourne United, who admittedly are very, very good team. Good, but they get a chance to redeem themselves tonight against the Hawks. So KG Cunningham, co-host, nice to see you, mate. You've got to be honest, pretty good weekend for South Australian sport.
Absolutely fantastic, Billy, and flying the flag. Look at the AFLW. Of course, the Crows, they're flying at the moment. A great win over the Eagles. So they're on top, 3 out of 3. So great weekend, absolutely great weekend.
Yeah, top of the ladder, the Adelaide Crows and the AFLW as well, which
I can't believe the Strikers.
They lost six straight. They'd never lost that many in their life, six straight. They won one, they lost one, and now they've won six straight. And I don't think they've ever won six straight before.
I cannot believe what they've done.
21 days between winning six straight, or losing six straight and winning six straight.
Unbelievable. And I reckon they'll get through. I reckon they'll beat the Sixers and take on the Scorchers in the final. That's remarkable.
KG, last night they beat the Sydney Thunder.
Yes.
Fantastic game of cricket. I'm pretty sure you watched it. I watched it every ball. There was a moment early on in the Sydney Thunder innings who were chasing where Usman Khawaja ran and got a thickish edge off Matt Short, I think, was the bowler.
Correct.
And it was caught, claimed the catch and given out by Farwan Ahmed, the leg spinner for the Adelaide Strikers.
Yep.
I'm watching it going, oh yeah, that's caught. No problem at all with it. I thought at first sight, definitely caught. I saw the replay. I thought, oh yeah, look, his finger has been squeezed into the ground.
Yep.
But yeah, that's out. No problem at all. And then there was all sorts of kerfuffle to the point that Usman Khawaja sort of threw every toy out of the car. I mean, insofar as Usman Khawaja does, he's a pretty level-headed sort of guy.
Pretty
but
composed.
He was clearly pretty disappointed with the way that all played out.
Yeah, I thought he was a little unlucky. When I watched it in replay, I thought, no, that's inconclusive. And I would have thought that the batter gets the nod there. I would not have given it out, no.
So shop online and in-store at Barbecues Galore, the range, the price, the knowledge, now you are cooking. I'm just interested, you know, we've got people ringing in. I'd be very interested in their thoughts on whether they thought it was a catch or not. And what is the solution, KG? Because you can't have these soft outs and maybe it was out, maybe it's not. Let's go to the vision. It takes 5 minutes. Everything's pretty inconclusive anyway.
But Benny, if it's not completely there to see, and there's some doubt, it's got to go to the batter, surely.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're going to talk about it. Troy from Collie has phoned in. Troy, welcome to Sports Day.
Oh, the Bennington Flowerpot Men show.
It absolutely is, Troy. You're spot on.
What's you on about?
The Ken and Ben Flowerpot Men show. Troy, what did you think? Did you think it was a catch?
I don't really care, mate. I didn't ring for that.
What did you ring for?
What did you ring for?
I think it was a catch. It was a catch. Hey, Ken, I heard you on Saturday morning with Graham. People are pushing for Cornsey to play bowls.
Yeah.
I reckon he'd be really good at it because he could be as biased as he likes then. Get away with it.
Well, Troy, that's why we're having a night, because we were talking about sports and so forth and what he was doing, what he was playing, and he said, you know, I really believe my forte now, I'd be very good at lawn bowls. Having said that, we had the Lawns SA get on the phone and offer him a challenge. So that's he's going to live up to what he said now, Collie. So we'll see what happened there, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Troy.
Okay, Ken.
Good on you, Troy.
Good,
thanks,
Troy,
for your call. Let's get back to the topic at hand here.
Yeah, exactly.
KG, I've got to make this point. Everyone's talking about that in the BBL we need the DRS.
Well,
we should be adding it. We should be making sure that every decision can be potentially referred to the third umpire.
Yep.
Can I offer you a suggestion that we go completely the other way?
Well, dump it all.
That we get rid of DRS for BBL altogether.
Well, I thought initially, well, they introduced it was for that the hell of the real bad decision, but now it's LBW, it's this, it's that, it's everything. And look, if you can't do it for every competition, and they can't because it's so expensive, yep. Evidently, then why can some competitions have it and other competitions can't?
It's very expensive.
Either in or out.
You might have two or three games in one day. You're playing at a lot of regional outposts. It's very, very difficult to set the technology up for all of those grounds.
Well, it didn't work in Brisbane.
Didn't work in Brisbane for the test.
I know.
But let's just game this out for me. Right. So it's also very, very time consuming. And one of the great problems with the BBL right now is the amount of time it takes to get through a game. We're seeing games go for 3.5 hours in the men. The women are pretty good. Mm. The men are very, very slow. The DRS only makes it slower. Here's my theory. Let's eradicate the DRS altogether.
And go back what to the umpire.
And we don't even use DRS or decisions. We can use them for runouts and that's it, because that's a pretty straightforward system, I think, stumpings and runouts.
Yep.
But we're even going to television now to try and determine if a ball hit the rope before it was fielded. Catches like last night are another classic example. Yep. Here's my argument. Let's just make it a player honesty system. If you claim you catch it, you claim you catch it. If you claim that you kept it in the field before it hit the boundary rope, then that's what you claim. And I tell you what, one thing that the television cameras will do, they'll determine if you're lying or not. And you will be hounded if you are someone who is deemed to be taking the mickey out of the game by claiming a catch that you shouldn't have claimed, or claiming that you kept the ball inside the boundary line when you didn't. Put the onus back on the players. Show some honesty. It's meant to be, spirit of cricket. It's meant to be a game of honour anyway. And then every other decision that needs to be made is made by the umpire, and we just run with that decision and be done with it.
Look, Benny, I know where you're coming from, but that's never going to happen, Benny. Now they've made the move to this DRS, they're going to use it more often and more times. They won't go back to just the umpire's call. They won't.
The players prefer DRS, but if we just said there's no DRS...
You're not going to fight with me, because I've never liked it. The umpire's call decision is a glaring example when an LBW decision, if part of the ball hits the stumps and it's an umpire's call, it's not out. It's ridiculous.
Interested in your thoughts. It's on the week's open line, 8223 00. Hey, we're going to be talking to Tom Wren after the break about the Australian Open. You've been watching it?
Oh, I have. Ash Barty the other night. How good was she up against that young American, Fan Dinkum? I'll tell you what, she's going to take some beating, Ash Barty. I'm telling you right here and now.
She beat Alison Anisimova last night. She was absolutely...
She's coached by Darren Cahill.
Coached by Darren Cahill, of
Correct.
Course. So it was a little bit weird, wasn't it?
Seeing our own Darren Cahill cheering on the American.
She's
a talent, but she did not let her into the match for one moment, actually.
Another amazing match today was Elise Cornet knocking out Simona Halep.
That?
I watched bits and pieces of it,
KG.
That's
one of the best matches, women matches, I've seen in a long, long time. Some of the rallies and the power in which Halep and Cornet hit the ball was incredible, Ben, honestly. And they were exhausted.
And I've got to say that the draw just opens up a little bit more for Ash Barty every time a big-name seed gets knocked out.
Well, Halep's gone.
Simona Halep out, and she was someone that I thought might be able to contend with Barty, because she just has that capacity to keep getting the ball back.
But really, Benny, can I ask you a question? Can you, in the form that she's in at the moment, Ash Barty, can you really see anybody beating her? I know no one's unbeatable, but the form she's in, I think at the moment, I can't see anyone beating it, to be quite frank.
There's still a couple of players, very, very good players, left in the draw, KG. I don't think she'll have too much trouble with her next opponent, which is Jess Pegula.
No.
It's a girl that she actually beat in the 2019 French Open when she went on to win it. She actually beat Alison Anisimova.
Correct.
In that tournament as well.
Well.
I'm of the belief that she's obviously favourite, and she is favourite for a reason, but Barbora Krejcikova has been in very, very good form. Mm. She's also a French Open winner. Madison Keys is playing delightfully.
Yes, she is.
She beat Paula Badosa yesterday.
I saw that.
And that was a stunning result, because Paula Badosa, the Spaniard, was the one who won the Sydney International and came in really good form.
I don't think she's good enough to beat Barty, the form Barty's in at the moment.
And, Elise Cornet. I mean, if you knock over... Simona Halep, then you've got a game going.
She was fantastic today, Cornet. That's the first time I've seen her play, Benny, but she was hit the ball so powerfully, and her moving around the court was sensational.
Yeah, so I think it's a real... I've enjoyed the women's tournament more so than the men's so
far. That match today was fantastic, and I'll be amazed if Ash Barty doesn't win the Australian Open there, the form that she's in at the moment.
Well, we're going to go to a break. Lumo SA, Aussie-owned energy with plans and great local awards made for Adelaide. We're hopeful of getting Tommy Wren on the other side. Don't go away. You're listening to Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia, the super fast charging all electric Kia EV6 and Lumo SA, Aussie owned, made for Adelaide.
Yeah, you listen to Sports Day. KG Cunningham with you as always. Ben Hook is in the chair for David Wildy for the next couple of weeks. We're doing it thanks to Weeks, the open line 8223 0000. Save $45,000 on your next home with Weeks Home. It's time to turn our attention to the Australian Open, the super fast charging all electric Kia EV6. The super fast charging all electric Kia EV6. I'm saying it again, KG. It's as silent as the critics. Find out more at kia.com/au. Tom Wren is on the line. He's about to join us. Just before Tom updates on everything going on at the Australian Open, just want to let you know that in the girls' singles, there's a young South Australian girl called Charlotte Kempinars Pox. She has just won through to the third round.
Oh, fantastic.
She beat Sarah Sato from Japan today, and I imagine Tom won't even be aware of that because I know he's been on air for the Medvedev match. So she's now through to the third round. She'll play Teresa Valentova, who's from the Czech Republic. So that's a great story.
Oh,
little South Australian youngster.
Yeah, fantastic.
I think she won a qualifying match to try and get into the Adelaide International and then didn't go any further. She won one and missed the second round.
So how far has she gone here?
Well, she's in the third round now of the girls' singles. So
how
this
good
is the junior girls' singles.
Yeah.
So good on little Charlotte.
Well done.
She's done very, very well. As I bring in a great friend of this program, a great friend of us, KG.
He's a great bloke.
Tommy Wren, welcome to Sports Day.
Thanks, boys. that is a fantastic result. Big rap. I've got to live up to it now, fellas. But, another fantastic day of action over here, which I'm sure we'll sink our teeth into. But great to hear some locals doing well at the AO.
Daniil Medvedev hung on against a very tough American opponent, Maxime Krejci, the serve volley specialist. It's a bit like the old Patrick Rafter days, isn't it, Rennie? What was it like, that match on court?
You don't see it much these days, boys, anymore, that classic serve volleyer. And look, Krejci's world number 70, that won't be the case for long. He's going to climb up the rankings. I'll tell you what, Medvedev gave us the full gamut of emotions today. From the first set, he won 6-2. That was comfortable. Kind of what we expected. After that, we did not get a break of serve until 5-all in the fourth set.
Mm.
And Medvedev just could not break him down. Won the second set himself, but then lost the third in a tie break. And he was frustrated, Hooky. He thought he was going to be off court in an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. Took him 3.5, and there were some explosions out there. At one point, he was heard to say, "This is the unluckiest day of my life," but it was in that beautiful, colourful Russian accent. "This is the unluckiest day of my life." And, you know, like, it was absolute theatre out there. And, look, Krejci, to his credit, stuck to his guns. But in the end, finally, Medvedev broke him down in that fourth set.
Can I just ask, Rennie, has there been a lot of the suing that clearly upset Medvedev when he took on Nick Kyrgios in the second round? Has that been ongoing at the Australian Open? And in particular, did that affect Daniil?
Not today. Didn't really hear too many of those calls. But, Hooky, you're right. Because he was playing an underdog, and Australian crowds generally cheer for the underdog, they were, I would say, 80 to 90% behind Krejci. So there's a little bit of that, but he plays up to it as well. I mean, you've seen him be the villain at the US Open before, the other night with Kyrgios. I think he's a very, very entertaining character, and sport needs characters. It needs villains. I'm not necessarily sure he's a villain, but he's great entertainment out there on court, and he played up to it today. He got really angry with the chair umpire because Krejci was taking time between points, but he wouldn't start the clock until 4 or 5 seconds after the previous point. And Medvedev blew up when he didn't, you know, give him a time violation. It was sensational. He was doing all our work for us. It was great. I didn't have to do anything out there.
Tommy, I'm surprised that he did, and I didn't see the match. I was here, but I was surprised because when he was playing Kyrgios, he had every right to get upset or angry or have a crack at the chair umpire, but he was so cool, calm and collected. Yet today, according to you, Tommy, he's thrown a wobbly.
And maybe because, KG, it is stifling hot over here.
Yep.
I know you've had some rain back in Adelaide, and we're expecting that later in the week here, but I think there was a little bit of that, and I think also the fact, KG, maybe the other night, he knew that he was going to get a hostile crowd.
Correct.
Today, I think he was expecting a quick match, get off court, prepare for the next one.
Yep.
He didn't get it. You know, he was forced to grind it out in the blazing sun, and it was humid today. I mean, you don't expect humidity in Melbourne, but I'm telling you, fellas, it's oppressive today. So I think just that, having to grind it out, a couple of calls going against him. He got there in the end, but it took... I'll be fascinated to see how much energy it takes out of him moving forward for the rest of the tournament.
Rennie, you probably haven't seen it, but Alex de Minaur has lost the opening set to Jannik Sinner and is down a break in the second set. So he's probably going to do it tough from there. I think he might be on Margaret Court Arena at the moment. The big game tonight will be Stefanos Tsitsipas will play Taylor Fritz. That's a really fascinating game, Tommy.
It is. And look, Tsitsipas is a player that knows how to go deep here. It was probably his breakthrough Grand Slam. I thought Hooky in 2019 when he made the quarterfinal. You know, made it again last year, French Open finalist last year, got a huge support crew. I mean, we've got a large Greek population that live in Melbourne. So he's a bit of a crowd favourite, Tsitsipas. And with no Djokovic, no Federer, he's one of the massive favourites here. So, that look, I expect that he'll move through there. He might have to work hard for it, but he's a player that when he hits his groove, his shot-making, it's top class. He's in that very, very top echelon. So I expect he'll go through to a quarterfinal here tonight.
Tommy, what about Ash Barty? Have you seen her play better tennis than she's playing right at this moment?
Well, I've got to apologise, Cage. I think I spoke to you yesterday.
Yep,
and
you did.
I thought she'd get pushed to three.
Yep.
I mean, Anna Samova, for me, played the match of the tournament so far against Osaka in the third round, but she was just no match.
Nah.
And she's just absorbing all this pressure, and you just hope it keeps going. She's got three more matches to go now, Cage, and she looks every bit the player at the moment to reach a final. She'd be the first finalist since Wendy Turnbull in 1980. We haven't had a Grand Slam winner on the women's side.
That's a long time, Tommy.
It's too long, KG. So, I mean, she's playing the right way. She just lets all that expectation wash over her. She's a massive chance to do it. And the seeds are falling left, right and centre. We had another one today with Simona Halep.
Yes.
So, look, there's no reason why she can't do it.
Rennie, thanks so much for your time. Always appreciate your company on Sports Day. We'll catch you later in the week.
Look forward to it. Thanks, boys.
Thanks, Tommy.
Play Keno from only $1 a game with a draw every few minutes. There's always time for a spot of Keno. Play today. Gamble responsibly. Well, we are off to a break, and I tell you what we're going to be doing on
Who's
the other side.
Up?
We're going to be catching up with the great man, Travis Head. Looking forward to hearing from him as the Adelaide Strikers go very, very nicely in the BBL. Don't go away.
Sports Day for Kia. The super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. And Lumo SA. Aussie-owned, made for Adelaide.
Welcome back to Sports Day with KG and Ben Hook. We're doing it thanks to Tyre Power, who are Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer. Think safety this January. Get the 5-minute tyre safety check at your local Tyre Power. KG, I've been looking forward to this all show. It's catching up with a South Australian who has had a remarkable 6 months.
It's been more than remarkable. Like, it was touch and go whether he got into the side initially. Then when he gets into the side, he goes bang, bang, bang. And that 100 in Tasmania was his best dig of the year from my point of view. Man of the series, man of the match, unbelievable.
We're talking about Travis Head, of course. Now he is up to it in his boots with the Adelaide Strikers, who have come from nowhere to be in the final three, and they'll be playing against the Sydney Sixers on Wednesday night. Travis Head joins us now. Travis, welcome to Sports Day.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Travis, it feels like in the last couple of months, everything you have touched has turned to gold. Of course, an amazing Ashes performance from you, dominant at the Gabba, amazing knock at Hobart. And then, of course, you've just lobbed on the doorstep of the Strikers, and things are going very nicely there as well.
Yeah, it's been an amazing couple of months for me. It's been great fun coming back to the Strikers. Obviously, I've absolutely loved every minute that I've played for the franchise, and having been involved in the last time we won one, it'd be lovely to win two more games. And a lot of doubters at the start of the season, and watching on TV, thought that hopefully we could get on a roll and sort of get ourselves respectable in the competition. And then we snuck ourselves in, and to have obviously myself and Alex come back has been massive. Alex has taken a lot of load over the last two nights, so hopefully come Wednesday I might be able to chip in with a couple of runs. Be nice.
Honest answer, how many of your teammates did you have to introduce yourself to on Friday night? I reckon you would never have met Henry Thornton. I'm tipping you probably hadn't met Ian Cobain. Any others that you maybe had to just go up and say, g'day there, my name's Travis Head?
Yeah, Thordo was the only one. I've Coey played for East Torrens for a few years.
Of course,
In Leighton, the Darren Lehman Academy and whatnot, and then having played in for Sussex, we played against Gloucestershire last year, and obviously him being close with Frankie Worrell. So, we've crossed paths a few times. I was surprised, to be honest, that he was over here and he's just playing hardly a career. I had a good chat with him a couple of days ago, and he said, "I was just luck of the draw sort of thing." And I know he could play, and he's been. I didn't know he could be this good. He's been unbelievable for us, and I think that just shows a little bit like myself at the start of the summer. You come in without no fear and just think, I'm going to lay it all out on the table, and Coey's done that for us. And this is probably the greatest opportunity he's going to have for at the moment to get on the big stage in the Big Bash, and he probably didn't think it would come along, but he's taken his opportunity, and it's been great to see.
Travis, can I ask you about that issue? What was your attitude coming into the Test series? It was touch and go whether you got in there or Khawaja got in. But when you went in there, did you change your attitude towards your batting? I remember reading an article where Pat Cummins had something to say to you. Did you change?
No, I didn't change. I feel like I had a really good start of the summer for South Australia. Yep. I had my challenges at Sussex in England, and that was challenging. But I worked through those, and I actually felt like there was runs around the corner. Every time I went to bat in England, I felt like I was hitting the ball beautifully. I was training and working hard, and it just wasn't happening. And then I come home, and I guess conditions that I'm used to, and started the Shield season beautifully, and then rolled into a couple of one-day games, and then started to get a bit of momentum through the season. And definitely that last 100 just before we went into camp definitely helped me, settle me probably a little bit.
Yep.
But then also the selectors settled me, Pat settled me. So the camp was really good for me. So I was just being myself and try to play my own way. And yeah, Pat had a good chat with me before the morning of the first test, and just sort of like said, "I want you to play your way. And if you feel that the way the game's going, or I want you to be aggressive at five." But yeah, just ride that balance. And geez, I had some good batters ahead of me during the season that put myself in some great positions to bat. So I was very fortunate to come in some situations where I could take the game on.
I did spend an afternoon at Karen Rolton Oval watching you knocking up a lazy 220 in a 50-over game. So, yeah, that's not bad form coming into an Ashes series. I'm interested in Sussex because, I mean, you're sort of an unknown from... It's unknown that you've gone over to Sussex and you're playing your county cricket there. It's really not in the public eye at all. We saw some really difficult-seeming wickets all the way through the Ashes series. Not many guys managed to survive, let alone... and thrive on it. You were the only bloke, really. I mean, Marnus had some moments, of course, and David Warner early, but you were the one bloke who really seemed to handle it well. In hindsight, dealing with the English wickets that you were exposed to at Sussex during our last winter, do you think that had some effect?
Yeah, and there's no doubt that you have learnings over your career. I've played at Yorkshire, Worcester and Sussex now, and loved every single moment of those periods. And I think that held me in good stead when I went to the Ashes in 2019. Yes, I didn't get the results I would love, but I contributed in middle moments and felt like my game was in good order over there against the swinging ball. Obviously, yeah, batted on some extremely great wickets at Sussex, but also played at Bunston probably 3 weeks before we went into camp. We were in the Shield game before we went to before we played at Karen Rolton against Queensland, and it was probably exactly the same wicket, to be honest. It was probably a little bit greener on day one, but day two was probably similar to day one in Hobart in the Test match. So I think that held me in good stead because I was really happy with my technique. I didn't get many runs. I would have maybe got in the teens and faced sort of 25 balls. And I think that's a real good gauge for me, sort of 20, 30 balls in my innings. Yes, you're not going to get runs every time, but if I can be really sound and consistent in my technique, which I was in that innings, my first real little mistake was I was in the shed. So I took real confidence from that, even though I didn't get runs, knowing that I had the blueprint in Hobart. So to have that, I guess, and have that in the back of my mind, and Henry Hunt played beautifully in that game as well. So just learning on how he played, and I really enjoy batting down there as well because it's challenging, but there's always runs on offer. It's a quick outfield, so I knew if I could put pressure on the bowler and get enough balls in scoring opportunities that I could get us in a position where we could win a game of cricket.
Travis, was that your best dig of the summer? You had a number of great digs, but that dig in Tasmania, from my point of view, I thought was your best. How would you rate that? As your best?
Yeah, it would be. Yeah, definitely. I think obviously Brisbane was unbelievable, and the
150.
The whole part of that, and being in a session and getting on with it and slogging. Yep. But I felt like throughout my whole innings in Tassie, I know Marnus probably moved around the crease more, took the bowlers on more. I felt like I was just batting freely and just normally.
Normally,
Felt like I wasn't trying to take anyone on. I was just, if the ball gave me scoring opportunities, it did, that I would score. It did help that Wood, bowled 150 clicks through the whole summer. And it actually, it was probably the best thing for that wicket because it just slipped on a little bit. It gave me a way, it gave me a chance to get away. And then I guess once you get rhythm on that wicket, get in, the bowlers are going to see him around more, like your Wokes and your Robinsons and whatnot. And Broad, who gave me nothing really all series, it probably gave me, got me in better positions and got me away in meaning. So, no, it was definitely my best, I think.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, I'll say, you know, when you're just batting defensively, just taking every ball as it comes and you score a run a ball 100 on an absolute seeming green top, yeah, that's not too bad, Travis. We're talking to Travis Head, of course, had a wonderful Ashes series, but we do want to turn our attention to
the Strikers.
The Adelaide Strikers, who've had a remarkable... I mean, they were not worth a crumpet three weeks ago, Trav.
Cold pie.
Yeah, and have won, what, six in a row?
Six in a row.
Yeah, so I think lost six in a row, then won one, lost one, and won six in a row.
Remarkable.
Since. I mean, you've only come into the group late, but you've obviously kept a close eye on it. You're the captain. I mean, you're not captain at the moment from the perspective that you've just left it to Sids, and no reason why you wouldn't do that, but you've obviously kept a pretty close eye on it. Can you sort of explain the basis behind the turner, and in particular because Rashid Khan upped and left and went to play for Afghanistan. So, I mean, anyone with... I'm sure a punter, you'd be scratching your head.
Wouldn't have backed him with bad money.
No.
No, yeah. I think Rash has done that for us a few times. I think looking back on the year that we won it, and he left and was like, oh, no, we're going to fill the gaps. We've always had someone to fill the gaps. So Liam O'Connor did a fantastic job over those years. Now we've got Farwad. Mm. So all we need from Rash is that we know that we'd love him to be here the whole time, but we know he's going to win enough games, hopefully get us in a final. And then you hope that you're on the right. You're hitting momentum and you're playing well. And a bloke like Shorty stands up. Farwad plays well. Sid does his thing. Kez having obviously Kez back. So, oh, mate, I can't wait for the next two games. I think we've got a real show at it. And Rash did his job. Rash got us there. Rash won a few games. We took six for him one game. I think just the personnel, just having Ian Cobain come in and Thornton and some fresh people come in that sort of around that period where things weren't going as well as we would have liked. A couple of fresh faces, a little bit more energy. We started to get a win on. The energy in the group is at the moment, for a group that's been on the road and stuck in a bubble and the challenges around that, and they're in level 5 lockdown at the moment protocols where you've got to stay in our own room.
God,
and can't do anything. So it's real pressure on. So walking to an environment where the bikes are absolutely loving it, thriving on it, and just like almost getting on the train and thinking like we're on a roll here we've played some extremely good teams. Hobart is a dangerous team, and the Thunder we didn't beat this year in the home away season, and they've knocked us off in two finals previously. So there was definitely a bit of, personally, there was definitely a bit of an urge to knock them off in a final. And gee, we got tense, but we got the job done, which was very, very satisfying against a team that's had the wood over us.
Always pretty important when you're playing the Thunder, get Usman Khawaja early. There was a controversial catch, Trav. Now, I've spoken to KG at the start of the show. I was adamant it was a catch. As soon as I saw it, I thought, caught. Yep, the ball has squeezed his fingers into the ground, but they'll give this out for sure. I was stunned by the controversy around it. Trav, how did you see it?
Yeah, I felt the same way on field. I was at backward points. I wasn't far away from Fuzzy, and I felt like, yeah, it went in clean. And like, I listened to what was said after the game, and I feel like Fuzz plays it the right way, so I obviously backed him in. The footage, I think, like we said, it comes down to soft signal. Soft signal is out. I feel like there was a finger under there. There probably was a blade of grass on the ball, technically, but how many times do we see these catches where fingers are under the ball, but the ball's going to jam it. There's definitely always going to be grass that hits the ball, I think. Mm. So, like, to the letter of the law, then there's not a lot of catches that probably shouldn't be out. It's a sticky one because he's their best player. The Thunder think it's not out. The Strikers think it's out. And it's just one of those things that comes down to the decision that's made. So the soft signal's probably hurt. It helped us. I felt like it was a fair catch on field. So the umpires was seen a different way, but I think that's what happens when you play against each other. Like, both teams are going to see it. We don't open the other eye. So it's an interesting one.
Yet to meet anyone who's walked for a 50-50, KG.
Never walk. Wait till the finger goes up. Travis, I think with all due respect, you're downplaying why suddenly the Tigers have improved. When you've got people like Travis Head and Alex Carey walking through the door. Mate, if I was a player, I would feel 110% better. You and Alex just your presence in the room and on the ground, I think's had an effect.
Yeah, we hope so. Like,
no, it's got to.
I appreciate that. Yeah, and I didn't see the environment before. I know Diz was keen to get us back, and I think just having us in the field as well, like you said, like having two experienced heads that are calm, consistent. Like I can sit down there with Sid and Kez at the other end with the guys. We're communicating about the game, and you got and Kez, I think. Well, we've seen Matty Shaw. He's been unbelievable this season, and he's bowling four overs and batting and trying to do everything by himself. And just to see him go out with Alex and. Alex, about the way he has, I think he's brought the best out of Shorty in the last two games, and that partnership has just flourished straight away. So you're probably right, having us come out back in, but we know that the other team's got the same. Nathan Lyon's probably doing the same thing, sixes, and the Scorchers have had a flurry of guys come in as well. So the next two games are going to be challenging. Hopefully we've added enough KG to get us over the line in the next two games. Hopefully we can contribute, and it'll be one of the most amazing BBL comebacks probably
it'll be the greatest comeback since Lazarus, I can tell you, because you were dead in the water. I tell you what, Benny, I'm on them. They are playing with so much confidence.
And I love the predictability, Cage. We're
so
seeing Matt Short bowls over 1 and 5.
Exactly.
Sidsy and Harry Conway get one away in the... they both bowl the surge, they get one away in the power play early. But then Travis Head comes on and bowls over number 17, which was fairly important too, my man.
And you've played a lot of cricket, but going back to the point that Travis made, talking to him in the field, like there's a reason for it.
We'll wrap this up, Trav, but love to ask your thoughts on Thomas Kelly before we do, because he's KG's second favourite, because you're on the radio with us, so you're number one. But Thomas Kelly is running a close number two. Gee, he offers a real spark, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's, I think he's just lapping it up. He's just loving every single moment of playing the BBL. Unfortunately, I think what hasn't happened, we haven't got massive bumper crowds. And I think someone like him, he just thrives on it even more and just love it even more. So, but he is a huge talent for us. We've seen it for a while. It's great to see him get opportunities. It's a tough place to bat. And I think he's a perfect character for that. He's a selfless cricketer. You can see in the last two nights, he's got out the second last ball both times, which is frustrating when you get averages. The game's always about averages and whatnot. And he's walked off with a smile on his face. He's done the job. I feel like he batted beautifully that night. He got 16 off 13, which is a really important little stage for us to get the score that we did. He's elite in the field. His energy never dies. And he just loves seeing guys do well and just enjoys each other's success. So he's a bright future for us for South Australia. Hopefully he can continue to learn from these guys and continue to develop. But he hasn't knocked the world down yet, and he hasn't had that breakout thing, but he's just continually getting consistent and getting better and better and just doing his job, and that's what he's doing. So it's great to see.
Trav, I don't think it's unreasonable to say that we've been a little bit starved of success as South Australian cricket fans. Of course, the Strikers 4 years ago winners, but when was the last Sheffield Shield, KG?
95, 96. I was there.
So with the cricket fans here, absolutely thrilled with what you've done in the last couple of weeks, mate. Looking forward to seeing you take on the Sixers on Wednesday. Hopefully you get past them, and then you've got the Perth Scorchers back in Melbourne. Mm. I think at Marvel Stadium that'll be on the weekend. Thanks for your time, and good luck over the next week or so.
Good luck, Trav.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Travis Head there from the Adelaide Strikers, and of course the Ashes as well.
If suddenly Alex Carey and Travis Head walk back through the door, the team you were playing with, God, that'll lift you, for goodness sake.
Do you know what else I find? Even if you're in the opposition team, I remember when I played my district cricket and you'd come up against East Torrens and you'd see D-hooks in the other team, and you would just think, wow, this is a real game of cricket now. Yeah. This is something pretty serious. Yeah. So I just reckon, and we've talked about this, you know, the BBL has struggled a little bit for attention, really on the basis of the fact that even for our Australian players, we don't have access to our best Australian players that often. No. And when Alex Carey, surprise inclusion after the Tim Payne issue, into the Strikers, we all thought that Travis Head was maybe 50-50 with Usman Khawaja. He got the berth, so completely missed the Strikers until now. But I reckon that does hurt the competition, and when they come back in, it really lifts the whole competition as well.
Absolutely spot on.
Fantastic to hear from Travis Head as the Adelaide Strikers head into I think it's called the qualifier. I can't even remember what the name of the game is
now. Doesn't matter, we'll beat them.
The qualifier, it's basically the preliminary final against the Sydney Sixers on Wednesday night. The super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. It's as silent as the critics. Find out more at kia.com/au. We're off to a break. Travis Head, our guest.
Sports Day for Kia. The super fast charging all electric Kia EV6. And Lumo SA. Aussie owned, made for Adelaide.
Yeah, thanks for joining us on Sports Day with Ben Hook and Ken KG Cunningham. It is a wonderful Monday evening, and we're going to talk about the weekend that was for Weeks. Save a massive $45,000 on all next-gen homes. Visit weeks.com.au. KG,
Benny,
what was your highlight of the weekend? I imagine probably you'd find it hard to get off the Strikers.
Oh, couldn't go past the Strikers. Like, they've come from nowhere, as we mentioned earlier, and to beat them in a thrilling game like that was a remarkable performance, and they are a dead set chance now, Billy, a big chance, I reckon.
There was a lot of highlights last night. Oh. Ash Barty's form against Alison Anisimova.
How good was that? Now, that young lady can play. She's coached by Darren Cahill. That young lady, the young American guy, yes. Girl can play. But Ash Barty never let her in the match.
Well, she's just remarkable the way tactically she can change up her own game to completely throw off her opponent. She was just stunning last night. I've got one knock on Ash Barty.
One knock?
Well, my issue is that I reckon over the course of 7 3-set matches in 2 weeks, you need a flat spot. You need to have a flat spot early on when you're playing someone who's not very good. She's got good opponents coming up from here.
Correct.
She'll play Jess Pegula, I think it is, who she actually played in the French Open when she went on to win in 2019.
Yeah.
But you just sometimes, you don't want to have a flat spot when you're playing the top end. You really want to be improving over time. And you've even seen Federer. He's had some matches where he struggled a bit early in the first week and gone on and got better and better.
I agree. But I don't think I've seen Ash Barty play better tennis than she's playing right at this moment. Even before Wimbledon and all that, she is playing at her absolute best at the moment.
Did you see any of the NFL over the course of the last day or so?
No.
I don't think you follow the NFL much, and I'm no expert either. And please don't ring in and say, Hooky, you don't know what you're talking about. But the divisional games are on yesterday and today. Yep. They've been absolutely remarkable. I didn't see the first three. So the LA Rams beat the Buccaneers. The 49ers beat the Packers in snow. That was remarkable in its own right. And the Cincinnati Bengals have beaten the Tennessee Titans. Today's game was between the Chiefs and the Bulls. Now, Kansas City, with Patrick Mahomes as the quarterback, they won it 2 years ago and were a bit of a surprise to miss last year. They have played the most remarkable last couple of minutes I've ever seen. I watched this whole game, but the last 2 minutes, the lead changed 3 times. I think there was 26 points scored from the two-minute mark that went into overtime.
Yep.
I haven't seen anything quite like the last 2 minutes of this game. It was basically twice a team had scored and that was going to be the end of the game, and the other team scored and then the other team scored again. It was just something else. So the Chiefs in the end got through. They scored. They won the toss in overtime. There'll be some issues with overtime rules, to be honest, because if you win the toss in overtime, you basically win the game. You just go down, score a touchdown, and that's the end of the game. But yeah, it was really fascinating today, the Chiefs and the Bulls. So the championship matches, of course, are on next week. Hey, just one interesting thing out of news today. Port Adelaide, a couple of their key forwards are under an injury cloud. So Charlie Dixon and Orazio Fantasia.
Well, this is a real concern. Now, it's been pretty quiet on the Port Adelaide front. They've sort of dug a trench and gone into hiding, so to speak. But I just wonder how serious those injuries are to Dixon and Fantasia, two very, very important players. Now, they wouldn't want to have problems with those issues going into the season. Hopefully they'll be right by the start of the year, but it's not a good sign.
What's the over-under for Port Adelaide with goals from Dixon and Fantasia combined? Is it less than 50 they can't win? Is it more than 50 they do win or should win? Where do you think that's at? How many goals do you reckon you need out of Fantasia and Dixon for Port to win the AFL?
Over 50.
Yeah, 50 is about my number, over-under. Yeah. I reckon if they're under 50, they're going to struggle to find goals elsewhere.
This is a big year for Port Adelaide, Benny. They've missed out on 2 grand finals, easy road in, coming out of the prelim games in Adelaide. This is a big year for Port Adelaide. They've got to make the grand final.
That was the weekend that was, thanks to Weeks. Of course, the 36ers play tonight against the Illawarra Hawks, so that's a massive game for them after a bit of a disappointing loss against a very good Melbourne United on the weekend.
The other good sign was AFLW when they knocked off West Coast Eagles. That was a very impressive performance. 3-0. very much on the road now.
The Adelaide Lightning won, and so did the Reds women. Yep. So certainly the women's teams are doing very well in Adelaide. Play. Right, what could you do with $5,000? Thanks to My Money House, you could win $5,000 cash. For details or your chance to win, visit iCanWin.com.au. My Money House, empowering people to live life on their terms. KG, that's all we got time for, my man.
Oh, that's gone quick, Benny.
Great show tonight. Love talking to Travis Head. It's how just fascinating how those boys are going, the Strikers.
It's a miracle, absolutely.
We'll do it all again tomorrow night, Cage. We'll see you then. Good on you.
Sports Day for Kia. The super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. And Lumo SA. Aussie owned, made for Adelaide.